Like Effect Now, I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Joy Powers. There's a lot of talk about the many dangers facing bees in the United States and how important these pollinators are to the environment and agriculture. But when we talk about bees, we tend to focus on just one type, honeybees. In fact, honeybees and other kinds of social bees make up just 2% of the more than 20,000 different types of bees in the world.
A new book for kids is calling attention to some of these lesser-known bees, namely the mason bee. The aptly named Turn This Book Into a Beehive includes 20 different experiments that bring the world of bees to life and invite you to literally turn its pages into a hive for local bees.
Author Lynn Brunel was in Milwaukee for a series of events in the area, and she joined me in studio. Lynn, thanks so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you for having me.
So I think the most astonishing thing first reading your book was just the fact that most bees aren't social.
Yeah, I know. That blew me away, too. Because I think when most people think of bees, they think of honeybees, right? They think of the queen bee, and they all live in a hive, and they make honey, and then if you get too close, they sting you. Well, it turns out only 7 species of the 20,000 species of bees are honeybees.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? But I think it just sort of shows, too, that that's our human interest in them because they produce honey. These other bees, they don't make honey. They're amazing pollinators, and they're going to be, I think, our saviors in the future, but they don't make honey.
So tell me about some of these solitary bees. What kind of bees are considered solitary?
So they're called solitary because they don't live in a hive. The ones that are in a hive that live socially, meaning one queen with all the worker bees, that's social. Solitary, every girl's a queen. And every female is sort of like a single mom. She finds the house, she gets the food, she lays the egg, she builds a wall, she does all that stuff on her own. The solitary bees will live near each other. But not in the same place. Sort of like they like, you know, condos next door to each other. So like when you set up when you create a hive for them, like with these tubes that they like, they'll all come in and they'll all live happily near each other. But each tube belongs to one particular female bee. It's cool.
And those bees are specifically called mason bees.
Mason bees, because they use mud to spackle these walls in between to make these little compartments in the tubes. So a pile of food, lay an egg on the top of the pile of food, and build a wall. Get another pile of food, lay an egg on that, build another wall so that the straw-like container will have, you know, 10 to 12 little compartments, and the egg will eat the food, then create a cocoon around itself and winter over, and then in the spring, chew out of its cocoon, chew out of the mud wall, and fly out and start the whole thing all over again.
Now, this book, Turn This Book Into a Beehive, can in fact be turned into a hive kind of for these mason bees.
Yeah, so I looked up the word hive because I liked the title so much when I was like, oh my gosh, turn this book into a beehive. It's like a transformer. I love it. And then I thought, but I can't say hive because they're not making honey. Well, I looked up the word hive, and hive just means a man-made structure built to house bees. So it totally is a hive.
It completely is a hive, yeah.
But, I mean, again, when we think about it in terms of honeybees are domesticated, right? They were all brought over from Europe. They're not wild. Whereas these solitary bees, they're all wild. They're just wild and roaming free. So when you build a structure for them that looks appealing to them, they will make it their home. Whereas a honeybee hive, those were man-made structures in order to hold honeybees, you know, in order to be able to use their honey and their honeycomb.
Yeah. So there's the mason bee, but then there are a few other types of bees that live in completely different structures.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. I mean, if you think about it, with 20,000 different species of bees, you know, and only 7 of them honeybees, there are carpenter bees. They like to dig into wood and live in wooden holes. There are miner bees, and they like to dig into the soil. There are leafcutter bees. They live in these sort of tubes, too, these little skinnier versions of the tubes, and they don't dig for mud and make the walls. They actually chew up leaves and make a kind of a paper wall. And there's huge bees. There's, you know, bees the size of your thumb, and then there's bees the size of a fingernail paring. You know, they're all over the place.
I remember a while back I was planting an herb garden, and there were these little black things that were flying around, and a friend of mine was like, those are bees. I said, those can't be bees. And they were coming out of the soil. They were these tiny little guys that were coming out of the soil. What? And when I read your book, I went, oh, those he was very right. Those were bees.
Those are bees, yeah.
What kind of misconceptions do you get from, and not just adults like me, but the kids who you work with when you're talking to them about these bees?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is, you know, my own misconceptions of them before I wrote the book. You know, if I heard a buzzing sound, I was running in the opposite direction. Now I hear a buzzing sound and I'm like, what are you? Where are you going? What are you landing on? One of the, you know, the misconceptions is about identifying, right? So hornets and wasps, yellow jackets, they're kind of a little bit on the, they're going to sting you. They can be aggressive. They're not, you know. So how do you tell the difference between a hornet and a bee and a fly? Because some of the mason bees look like flies, right? And you know, you don't want to swat them if they're actually doing good for you. So the rule of thumb is, what do they land on, right? If it lands on a flower, like if those bees coming out of the dirt came up and landed on a flower, it's a bee. If it lands on your ham sandwich and starts eating it at a picnic, it's a hornet or a yellow jacket, because they're meat eaters. They eat other bugs. They're carnivores. They're not pollinators. They're meat eaters. And if it's a fly, it's going to land on dog poop, you know? So that's how you can tell by looking at that. But the misconception is that not all bees are striped. Not all bees are going to sting you.
What bees do, because there's, I think, misconception about like, well, a bee can only sting you once. You know, its stinger falls off. Mm. And what bees will sting you? Because it's not every bee, every kind of bee of every type. It's only specific bees.
Right. So the bees that will sting you are the honeybees. Honeybees and bumblebees. And the reason they sting you, they're not mean. They're not going after you just to be horrible and aggressive. They're protecting their hive. They have a lot to protect in that hive. The queen is the only organism that's putting out the genetic information for generations to come. So they have to protect her. They're not laying eggs. Only the queen is laying eggs, right? And then the honey. It takes so much time and energy for them to produce this honey. One honeybee can spend its whole life pollinating and gathering nectar, right, to make a teaspoon of honey. That's not a lot. So it's a huge amount of effort. And if you think about the hive with its packed full of honey and a queen bee, they need to have these defense mechanisms in order to protect somebody or something from coming to take that away. So they will sting you. And honeybees, I think, and bumblebees as well, their stingers is kind of, they're barbed, right? So they've got downward pointing little spikes. If it goes into your skin, it's not going to come out easy. And if it does come out, usually what happens is that they inject the stinger, and then it's got this little pool of venom at the bottom, and it pulses into you. That's what it stings. That's what hurts, is this venom. And then when they fly off, they leave the stinger in you, and it pretty much rips off the bottom third of their body. So they do die. Mm. But yellow jackets and hornets and wasps do not have barbs, so they can sting you over and over and over and over again. But mason bees and a lot of these solitary bees, they may have stingers because the stinger is the same organ that they lay eggs through, too. It's called an ovipositor.
Yeah, so is it just female bees then?
Yeah. Males pretty much do one thing. They wait for the females, they jump on the females, and they mate with them, and then they're done. They don't do anything. Nope, they just, that's it. So all the worker bees in a honeybee hive are female, all of them. And so anatomically, they're the same as the queen, but they don't use their ovipositor to lay eggs at all. They just use them for defense mechanisms and venom. A mason bee has the, you know, can use its ovipositor as a stinger. If you mess with a mason bee, it will sting you in that, it'll poke you with its stinger, but it doesn't have any venom in it, and it's not barbed, so you're really not going to feel it. And if you do feel it, what I've heard is that it feels like a mosquito bite. I've had them on me, and they've never, ever. I mean, I've never really tried to bug them either, so.
Yeah. I'll say that was part of the thing with the, when I was digging into this mud and these, like, little bugs started coming out. They did kind of pick at me.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like a sting like you would get from a bumblebee. It felt almost like a bite.
Yeah, because they don't have any venom.
So unlike bumblebees, they do not have venom. They do not live in hives that we think of traditionally.
Right.
I was also interested in how they pollinate. They pollinate differently.
Oh, they're such amazing pollinators. I wonder if it has something to do with the wildness of them. I don't know. Honeybees are very elegant, right? They're not quite as hairy. They land on a flower and they go for the nectar. That's what they're going for. It's their business to get the nectar so that they can start turning that into honey and head back to the hive. So they go for the nectar, and they might get pollen on them. If they get pollen on them, sometimes they'll take their spit and squish the pollen back into these little pouches in the back of their legs, right? So they like to kind of keep clean, but they still have pollen on them. Then they go to the next blossom, and some pollen falls off. They're good and efficient pollinators, but mason bees come in, and they're not elegant at all. They're total slobs, and they're fuzzy, so they, like, body slam the flower, and they roll around, and they get covered with pollen. And then they go to the next blossom, and they body slam that one, and they roll around. And so they pollinate 95% of the time, whereas honeybees 5% of the time. That means one mason bee can pollinate as many flowers as 100 honeybees, which is why it's so important to think of these pollinators when it comes to the fear of the colony collapse disorder and the fear of the, you know, if our honeybees die out, they are our main pollinators, but they don't have to be. I mean, we've got better ones in the wings that just don't make honey.
That don't make honey. But are there threats that are facing these mason bees, carpenter bees, the other solitary bees who do pollinate?
Mites are an issue. So in the book, I talk about, you know, adding a new hive and changing things out. Some people actually take the tubes out in the fall and open them up and rinse the cocoons and keep them in the refrigerator. Yeah, you don't have to do that. You know, pesticides are a real issue, right? The things that you spray on your plants in order to kill bugs, you know, if we think about it, they're killing bugs, but those bugs have the same chemical composition as we do. We're just much bigger. It's still hurting us. So that'll hurt the bees as well. And I also, as there's a section in the book that has different sprays that you can use that are made out of plants that are not going to hurt anybody, but they're going to keep the bugs away from your plants. Like, you know, you use garlic, you know, churned up in a potion of garlic and even a biodegradable soap and water, and it's going to protect your plants from being eaten by anything.
All right. Well, if you want to encourage a mason bee, or even perhaps a bumblebee, or whatever kind of bee you're trying to get, what should you be putting in your garden? What do those bees really like to pollinate, and what kind of amenities do they need?
It's different for every area, right? So whatever wild bee is in the area likes a particular kind of flower that is found in the area, right? So around here, I would say talk to a garden center and find out what the native species are, because they love native species. They even have seed packs that are meant for pollinators. They'll grow flowers that are really good for them. But it's interesting because they don't see the same spectrum as we do. We see red, orange, yellow, blue, green, violet, right? Roy G. Biv. Bees, they slide up a little bit. They don't see reds so much. They will see orange, yellow, blue, green, violet, and ultraviolet. So it slides up. So flowers that look white to us often have these ultraviolet patterns in them that are like, come all, you know, all you can eat, 24-hour dining, you know. So I would say steer up in that color. But all bees need water, but you don't want to put just a bowl of water out there because they could drown in it. So what I've done is I've used the bottom plate of a potted plant, you know, a shallow dish, and you put water in that, but you put marbles and pebbles and maybe even a stick in it so that you kind of give them beachfront property. You give them something they can land on solidly above the water, but that they can make their way to the water and not drown. Mason bees will need that. They also need mud. They need to have damp mud. We have a kind of very clay-like soil in the corner, and so I just made sure I kept that wet through the summer last year, just so that when they needed it, they could get to it. It's amazing how fast the little water dish evaporates, too. You've got to fill that up every day.
All right, so if you're looking for bees, water, mud if you're looking for a mason bee, and then
flowers.
This book.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
All right, well, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with me today, Lynn.
Well, thank you for having me.
Lynn Brunell is the author of Turn This Book Into a Beehive, and if you're interested in doing just that, head over to wuwm.com to see our beehive and learn how to make your own.